It's going to be one of those where it will show like a completely different camera. Oh, there he is. Amazing, amazing. How are you doing, Elliot? Good to see you, man. I love your just-in-time management, man. It's wicked.
Well, yeah, it is a little bit early here, so I did try to optimize for sleep.
That's all right. I hope it's the clocks haven't helped, have they? You're still 4 o'clock, 5 o'clock or something like this.
It's okay. It's not that bad.
Okay, yeah. Next week, just if this makes you feel any better, next week I'm getting up at 4 o'clock in the morning in order to do a live show for the ANZ population in Braintree. I thought, been neglecting the Aussies, I have to do one down under. So anyway, so I feel your pain, actually. Anyway, we are live, folks. So welcome to Braintree Live on Air. We're episode 92, bringing it to you every Friday and really looking forward to having a chat with everybody here. We've got an enormous amount of people have signed up. I couldn't believe it. I thought, okay, we're talking about developer interviewing, developer point of view, maybe 200 people or so could be interested. 450 people signed up to the damn show, of which currently there's something like 350 concurrent. So we've got like a huge amount of people watching. And that's not including all of the people on LinkedIn and on Facebook and on Periscope whilst that's still going. So quick sort of sound check, everybody. On Crowdcast, if you can hear me okay, just give me a quick hello. Let me know that audio is good. Same with everyone on LinkedIn. If you're watching this on LinkedIn Live, I think this is live now. Is it live? Oh, crap. I don't think it is. Okay, I mean, these things happen. I think it's screwed up. Anyway, actually, no, it's come back on. So LinkedIn, if you can hear me, please do say hello. Let me know audio is all good. If not, actually, I'm not sure what I can do about it. But there we go. And on Facebook, if you can hear me okay, just give me a thumbs up, a thumbs down, something like that. Let me know you can hear me okay. Okay, we've got a few people saying they can hear me. That's fine. Okay, wicked. So we are on to an amazing show, how to interview developers. What are great interview questions to ask developers? What do developers think about interviewing? And when you go into the point, like what is the point and purpose of interviewing actually? Because does it actually map to what this person can do? How relevant are the skills that we can possibly test for in this interview? It's going to be a super exciting show. And I'm delighted to welcome Ilya Brodsky for his third sort of stint in the hot seat as co-host. So Ilya, you're sponsoring the show actually, so you might as well say something about your cool product as well. Why don't you give us 30 seconds on VanHack?
Well, I think I'd rather let the product speak for itself. So if everyone just can take 30 seconds and go to vanhack.com, that's probably the easiest way to find out about it. Basically, we help companies hire developers and tech professionals quickly. That's all I'll say. And if you want, just go to vanhack.com, 20 seconds, click on the talent pool. You can see all our developers that are looking for jobs. You can filter through it, see if you can find some good ones. That's basically it.
And that's it. And I've just shared the link in the chat stream there, folks. So if you want to check that out, then please do so. Ilya, I think you've actually got a really interesting role to play here because you've obviously been involved in a lot of conversations with developers themselves, either coming onto the platform and then going on through the customer base. So you've actually got a lot to add to this mix. So I'm looking forward to hearing what you've got to say on this. Anyway, before we kick off, we always review the newsletter very quickly. You probably have forgotten that this is a part of the show, Ilya. If that's the case, please be honest and say you haven't read the newsletter. That's okay.
No, I did. So there's actually one article that I read that was both on Twitter and the newsletter, which it doesn't necessarily mean that was the best one, but that was the one that caught my eye. It was the one about the no employees, no deadlines, no work, like the Gumroad article. I think Sahil, I'm sorry if I'm saying his name wrong.
Yeah, yep.
He wrote a really cool article about how he went to 20 people and now he's just literally one person full time. It's him. And everything else is people who want to work when they want to work. I think that's the gist of it. But it's pretty interesting how everything's open and documented and the board meetings are public and it's very different way to run a company, which is now possible. So.
Yeah, and he's also like a great headline writer, isn't he? Because he said no meetings, no employees. Like his blog post headline was like, yeah, he's got some marketing genius in there. And everyone clicked on it. And rightly so, because Gumroad is a great product. I'm probably going to do a Gumroad initiative in 2021, by the way, folks. So if you want to like spend a small amount of money in buying a Gumroad brain food book, that's probably what's going to happen. But it will be different. It won't be about brain food. It's going to be about audience building and how you get to a business like brain food when you didn't mean to. Like, I did not mean to set this thing up as a business, but it's become that way. So it may be something you might be interested in if you're interested in audience building, community building, like how do you do these things. So anyway, super interesting blog post. I've just shared it in the chat stream there. Please do take a look. I think something that... it's a very experimental way to run a business, but like these technologies are starting to give us the opportunity to create new organizational types. And I think very exciting for all that. Okay, let's move on to the main topic at hand, Ilya. We're talking about interviewing developers. The Developer Point of View series is all about let's get a bunch of developers on screen. And we're going to do that shortly to say and ask them what they feel about recruiter behavior. And interviewing is a big part of that. The questions that developers get asked by recruiters, what are they? What is a good or bad interview and stuff like this. So from your side, what do you see as like bad interview questions from recruiters, or things that you've heard reported back to you by your developer community to say, you know what, I keep getting asked this. This is a surefire demonstration that this person doesn't know what they're talking about. That type of stuff. Are there any classics that you can share with us right now?
So just to confirm, this is more from the talent acquisition folks who are interviewing the recruiters, or not the technical interview, right? More
not technical interview at this point. We're talking about, and that's also something we should discuss. Like, is it like what kind of interview can you possibly do when there's a disparity of subject matter knowledge? So, from the tech recruiter point of view.
Okay. First I'll preface this and say that most are positive experiences for developers. I believe that developers do enjoy this part of the interview process more than others, just because it's the part where they're learning about the company, they're getting to know what the role will be. It's an interesting kind of, and I would say more light time in the interview process than the technical interviews, which are a little bit more pressure and level up interviews and all those things. So we don't hear too many kind of negative things from developers about this step in the process. The worst ones are more like when you miss an interview, or when you just are rushed and you're clearly just doing it just to do it, and it's like a formulaic kind of process. When you ask some kind of more personal questions up front, then maybe you should kind of wait until later on. Those are kind of the main ones, but generally it's not too bad.
That's interesting that you have that report, Ilya, because I would have imagined actually developers get super annoyed, particularly at this point, where they see the tech recruiter very much as just an unnecessary obstacle to get to the real conversation, which might be with the CTO or with a team member or whatever. Developers might get that sense that, hey, why is this person asking me the question when you don't know what you're doing, or you don't know the technology as much as I do? So, but I wonder whether the demographic is interesting as well, because when you've got highly motivated job seekers, no matter where they're from, right, they're going to be more happy to have that dialogue because they can see it as a signal of progress into the recruitment funnel which they want to go down. But it might be very different if you've been approached by a recruiter and then have to go through some sort of what feels like an exam of some type by this person, and you might just feel some resentment building up there. So maybe the structure of relations and the demographic you're talking to has an impact as well.
You took the words out of my mouth, Hung. Like that's exactly it. It's all about the demographic and the mindset of the developer, I guess, right? So, you and I, we could be doing an interview for the same job, but it applies to all positions, right? So if you are getting headhunted, typically companies just skip those steps. Thanks for that's my LinkedIn there, if you guys wanna chat. But they usually skip steps, right? So usually when a recruiter is headhunting someone, typically they like to do faster processes that are kind of more respectful of the time of the person and understanding that, you know, it's more of like, we're interested in you. But if it's the candidate who applies, I believe that the candidate does like to really understand. It's a big deal, right? It's a big move to go to a new job. So you really have to know what you're getting into before you write any code tests or anything like that.
That's actually the first lesson I think we can take from this, in the sense that the sort of the context is going to determine what is a good or bad interview experience, or what is a good or bad interview question. So an inbound candidate, if they've responded to an advert, they're going to have a different attitude to being involved in a classic recruitment process than someone who you've tapped up and perhaps wasn't even thinking about looking for job opportunities. So we might need to vary our approach depending on how we've made that first contact. So that's a super sort of relevant thing to discuss. And of course, you can extrapolate further on that, in the sense that, for instance, if someone's coming out of a boot camp for the first time, you can imagine they're very keen to look at new job opportunities. Then, yeah, that's a different person. Someone who's, you know, been an engineer for 10 years or something and really jaded by the recruitment experience. So all of these little nuances, I think, coming to the fore. Okay, cool. Let's bring on some developers here, Ilya, and see what they've got to say. We've got a couple of old friends we're going to bring on. We've got Ming Ho. She's coming back. We've also got Kritika as well, Kritika Puri. I hope she's going to be okay. I'm going to bring them on first. I don't want them to be staying up too late, especially Kritika.
Yeah, this is the, how can I say, VanHack, two great success cases that we're really proud of. So excited to have both of them on here.
Yeah, and they've been really good at sort of sharing their input and knowledge here. So very keen to get them on if that's possible. I think it is. We've also got like a bunch of other really interesting people to come on as well. Oh, and there she is. How are you doing, Kritika?
Hi, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you fine. There's Ming Ho, and she looks like she's in a restaurant. I hope that's okay.
No, it's a kind of a co-working space a little bit. Yeah. It's an office. Yeah. But it's quite nice. Yeah, it's quite like design.
That's cool. It looks like you can like work pretty much kind of without any huge sort of barriers or stuff like that, which is hopefully a sign that things will be improving way up. Anyway, so very quickly, you two, Kritika, you first, quickly introduce yourself, who you are, what it is you do.
So I'm working as a senior software engineer at Rival Technologies. It's in Vancouver, British Columbia. I'll be moving there soon, and I've got this job through VanHack itself. So yeah.
Amazing. How about you, Ming Ho? What do you do?
Yeah, I've worked as a software developer for like around 10 years, and mostly in startups, and currently work in Amsterdam, Lepaya, a company called Lepaya. Yep. And also my first job in Amsterdam is, I get that from VanHack as well.
Amazing. So this is like VanHack massive, really, isn't it? Let's talk about sort of this interview process. Let's talk about the interview itself. Can you give me your sort of general verdict as the sort of interview questions you get from recruiters? Are there any in particular that you have come to like in terms of interview questions? Are there any that you've come to kind of disrespect because, you know, you've heard it several times before, or it's become something you've realized this is just a cliche rollout? Is there any of those that stand out in your mind? Let's go to you first, Ming Ho.
Yeah, normally recruiters ask something about, like, because they want to know more about us, and they want to provide more information about the companies. And so normally they recruiters come to us and ask about our experience, of course, and what we're currently looking at. These are quite normal, but sometimes I feel a little bit like interesting that, because I would expect like recruiters would know, like, for example, the difference between like Java and JavaScript, and the classic Java for, or like Android and iOS, they are all mobile development, but they're different. One is for Android. And also, for example, like the Java for Android development and the Java for server development. That's quite different. So that's something I would expect that the recruiters may know, but probably it's some assumption I made. Yeah.
How do you feel when the recruiter doesn't know? I mean, so you're having this conversation, this person's contacted you, and over the course of the conversation, it becomes apparent that they don't know these differences. And I don't want to make a judgment on this person per se, but how does it kind of, what's your experience of that? How do you feel?
Actually, it depends on how it is brought up. For example, if it's just a question, like, is it a opportunity for you, a good opportunity for you, or it's normally it's fine because we're developers, recruiters, they're professional recruiters. It's quite different. So I can explain a little bit about like that's different. But if a recruiter just send me a like a link or something that this is the perfect opening for you and take a look and that's it, nothing else, then I would think a little bit like it's a little bit, I would like, for me, I will not, yeah, probably I will not get in touch with that recruiter again, because it means, sometimes for me, it means like it's kind of like to shooting in the air, yeah, something like that.
Yeah, yeah. I think very interesting. So basically, the demonstration of a lack of knowledge, if it's kind of delivered in a way that's like a salesman kind of way, like you need to be interested in this, and they've presented something that is not your background or something, then straight away you can assume this person hasn't done, firstly, they haven't done two types of research. They haven't done any research on the technology itself, so their job knowledge is poor. But they also haven't done any knowledge on you. So their candidate knowledge is also poor. So I can totally understand how someone might feel, okay, this individual hasn't put in a huge amount of energy here. I'm not going to respond with, you know, any more energy than it deserves. Okay, really interesting. How about you, Kritika? Is there any kind of behaviors when it comes down to, you know, the questions that recruiters ask that you think, okay, not this again?
Yeah, so for me, I think I feel good when a recruiter talks to me about my experience and they're well versed as a candidate who I am. They've researched about me and all of that. And I also like when they have some open questions about, like, they want to know a high level, they want to have a high level understanding of what's the salary expectation, maybe. These are the two things that I like to answer. But sometimes I think, I have seen situations where, the recruiter keeps asking you the reason for leaving your current job. So I think, yes, that's a good question to ask. But if a recruiter keeps pressing on that question that, you know, what was the main reason that I'm leaving my current company? It's good to have a small talk about that. But yeah, if I see a recruiter, like if I have a first phone call with my recruiter and they are like, constantly asking me as to what is the exact reason for me to switch, maybe, then I think that is something that might put you off a little, that, you know, look, I'm looking forward to your company. So it would be more better if we talk about what is being offered in your company or what am I looking for in your company.
Do you know why recruiters ask that question, Kritika?
I believe that, as per my understanding, they want to know that what is that I'm looking for that I haven't found till now and I'm expecting to find in their company. Maybe that is what I think is their point of view around that. But yeah, I would like to answer that once in a while, maybe in the beginning when I start the process. What if I go forward and I keep getting this question, then that might like put me off a little.
Okay, let me just address the crowd here, because this is a really interesting question. I'm sure every recruiter has actually been trained to ask this question. Now, I want you to know, want you to tell me why you think we're trained to ask this question. Please do put a comment in any of these chat streams and let me know why you think you've been told to do this. Now, my training, back in the day, rewind, you know, back in the Jurassic era, when I was taught how to do this, the theory was, okay, you need to de-risk this person. So in other words, this person coming in, you need to fully understand the motivation so that you can sort of present the right options or the shape the opportunity in such a way that this person is likely to take the job. So for instance, if you say, hey, actually the salary is too low, let's say that, you know, I managed to crank that out of you, Kritika, unpleasant as it might be, but you know, I'm satisfied with your answer to say it's a salary, then I would know, okay, I need to be in at this barrier with this a candidate because that's a priority concern. If it is about technology, then that's something I've got to think about. Maybe I need to, you know, think about presenting the job in a certain way. If it is about the manager, then okay, you know, that's something you think about as well. So I think lots of reasons, and this is again not to justify the behavior, but it's a de-risking approach from the recruiter's perspective. They've been taught to say, right, every candidate potentially is going to be a waste of your time. How do you make sure that your time is best spent on the candidates that are not going to waste your time? And hence they ask that question. So, go on.
Yep, sorry. So I think I agree with what you're saying. So maybe what I can say here is that the way that question is framed could be put in a way that you just talk in terms of the candidate itself, like what are you looking for? What are your expectations from this company or something like that? And not link it to your previous company, like what could you not find there that you're looking for in this company? So as long as it's just put in terms of candidate's point of view, I think that is a much more receptive question, I think.
I think so. And actually, you've now just caused me to think about a second reason why someone might be pressing you for that question, for an answer. They may actually be fishing for market intelligence also to try and identify, is there problems in this particular business that could potentially are exploitable for me as a supplier, or possibly as me as a person trying to take more people out of the company. So for instance, if you said, yeah, morale is terrible, okay, great. Then I would know as a recruiter, this place might be a good place because there might be a lot of demotivated engineers there. Let's spend more time. Or if you said something like, I don't know, it's gone out of my head, but it's a method of trying to do market intelligence, probably without being entirely transparent with the purpose of the question. So it's part of the reason why there is this doubt and suspicion between the two communities, actually, because recruiters are operating oftentimes at two levels. And, you know, whilst I don't want to say it's duplicitous, whatever that term is, but it can be, it can feel that way for sure. Okay, great. A quick one for the audience as well. If you have any questions, by the way, use the ask question feature at the bottom of the screen. We'll get to them at the end of the show. Ilya, do you have any sort of questions yourself to these two about the interview process, interview structure? You know, what kind of things should recruiters be doing, and what kind of things should recruiters not be doing?
I do. I just want to quickly say the chat. I'm loving the chat here. It's such a great conversation happening. It's exciting. So what about length of conversation? Both the individual interview itself and the interview process as a whole. Like, so obviously we see companies with 15-step interview processes, maybe not 15, but too many. What are your thoughts on that?
For me, I think 15 minutes to 30 minutes for the first time, I think it's fine because we need time to get to know each other a little bit, not only for about the company, but also each other. Yeah, to see if it's to get the way that we how we like help each other. Yeah, so 15 to 30 or sometimes 1 hour, it's totally fine for me for the first time. How about you,
Kritika?
Yeah, so for me, I think if I'm talking to the recruiter, it would be around I would say 30 to 40 minutes of a conversation to understand the job description, maybe what am I doing currently, what am I looking for, as I said. So those conversations with the recruiter can be around 30 to 40 minutes. And in terms of coming to the technical rounds or the entire interview process, I believe if it's a job for a full stack developer, say, suppose, then I would say that maybe I look for something that has two to three technical rounds, maybe, and then get over with the entire process and finalize a call with the maybe with the HR or the manager who's supposed to take you in their team. or if it's not like two different technical rounds, maybe like two technical rounds and then one proper managerial or a cultural fit round that we have, as we say. So I think this is what I would expect. Yeah.
A quick question to you, actually, because things have there's two things I want to talk about as in addition to all of this is, firstly, sort of what is the degree of technical capability the recruiter should have? This goes a little bit to your question at the answer at the beginning, Mingho. We recognize that it's a different job. Like, we don't necessarily think this person should be a developer and have developer level knowledge. There's a different person that's going to be doing that later on, but there is a minimum bar whereby, you know, it becomes a lacking, you lack the credibility to even do the pitch of it if you don't have the ability to discuss. So what level of technical competence or knowledge should a basic a recruiter should have when it comes to recruiting software engineers? Thoughts on this? Actually, go to you, Kritika, first on this. What are your thoughts on how technically knowledgeable a recruiter should be?
I think for me, it would be good enough if, like, I talk to the recruiter and they understand that if I'm a front-end developer, then they should know that as a front-end developer, I would be more concerned about technologies that are related to JavaScript or TypeScript, React, Angular, things like that. And if I'm a back-end developer, then they should know that if I'm looking for certain technologies and if I'm pointing out certain technologies, say, suppose I'm saying that I want to work with GraphQL. So they should know that, you know, GraphQL falls under the category of more of a back-end work. And what I'm saying in terms of front-end, what are those technologies that fall in that sector? So I think first thing is to be able to differentiate what is the set of technologies and to what domains do they belong. And the other aspect I would say that, say, suppose if if the recruiter for me has like five questions, like they have a questionnaire they want to ask me, like which is a basic, the way to start the conversation with me, then if I'm answering something, they should be able to understand what I'm saying. So suppose if they're asking me that, you know, what do you think is the difference between JavaScript and TypeScript? I've had conversations with the recruiters ask me this. So if I'm telling you an answer, you should be able to also know what's the expectation out of that question so that you can get back to the team and give the feedback that, you know, what she answered was correct and what she answered was not correct. So until unless you know what's the correct answer, you won't be able to give the correct feedback for me also back to the team that's recruiting.
Okay, so. Brilliant, Kritika. Let me just unpack that really quick. Basically, there needs to be some sort of like high level understanding as to just the relatedness of these technologies, like some the domain knowledge. Where is the person going to be working in terms of the technology stack, and what kind of technologies are related to each other? These are the things that are at the basic level. Don't make the discrediting mistake by simply being ignorant of some of the main tools, because they're fairly mainstream frameworks we're talking about, mainstream languages. We're not talking about things that are esoteric. And the second thing is, if you do ask a technical question, which I know a lot of recruiters attempted to do to demonstrate how much they know, but you've got to actually understand the response. Like, don't pitch something out there and not sort of have a clue about that response. It is better to admit that you don't know and then potentially just ask to be educated. Like sometimes, rather than try and trip someone up with, you know, your kind of book knowledge, and this person has, you know, actual practical knowledge, a better way to do it would simply be say, hey, listen, can you tell me the difference between, I mean, what are your thoughts are? And that is a good way to get the developer to be talking about things and then demonstrating some knowledge there rather than trying to pretend to have knowledge when you don't.
Right. Okay. Maybe if, like, say, suppose if the recruiter is also not well-versed, there can be situations where they are not fully aware. I think maybe they could try. One thing is that they could tell you that, you know, we are looking for a small talk around these couple of questions that we want you to answer so that we can, like, understand whether we should go forward or not. So if not the recruiter themselves, they could, like, put on a call with you and somebody from the team who can, like, spare 15 to 20 minutes to kind of get a high-level knowledge about what the candidate is currently doing and what he knows and what he does not know. So I think if it's not to the complete, if it does not fall under the responsibilities of the recruiter as a whole, you could just put somebody from the team and have a conversation for like 15, 20 minutes with them.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. I think it's about being honest and transparent about the level of knowledge, but not apologizing for it. I mean, I see some recruiters do that where they are, you know, they're very shy about saying they don't know. It's okay not to know. Everyone understands this is not the job. Okay, very quickly to you, Mingho. What are the sort of, I even forgot what the question was. I mean, but you know, the main, you know, I've lost my thread of thought here. I'm so enthusiastic about the idea that, you know, recruiters should embrace their ignorance, because, you know, we can't have all the knowledge out there. Go ahead, Elliot.
I was just saying, the question is how much should they know in the subject area, right?
That's right.
Yeah. About the previous question, I totally agree with, like, Kritika, but for me, I would say that for like 2 to 3 years experience recruiter, I wouldn't expect much because we can always learn from each other. So it's fine to ask questions, but not just like think they know a lot or like to, we can learn a lot from each other. So it's fine. We can just by asking and to know more about each other. And for more experienced recruiters, I would say, I would expect that have some of the basic knowledge like Kritika mentioned, and then cause it will be more efficient. And when, for me, it's like that. And for the second question about like, what are the important information for us about a job offer? For me, especially the tech stack and the role, the person they're looking for, what responsibilities they are of the role, and what the company or the team are looking at, what the person can. For example, my current job is working as architecture, but sometimes in startup, sometimes mess up a little bit. We have to do a lot of things, not only the thing in the responsibility. And so that's something good to know beforehand when we're like interviewing or when we know the openings, that the responsibility is there. But what is the situation right now? And what is the stage right now for the company, for the team, and where are they going? But sometimes there are too much information. So probably sometimes we need more like time to like a little bit more like back and forth to know more about each other.
Yeah. Well, I tell you what, that's a really good point. Like understanding of the job role is super important, but also the context that in which that job is going to be done, in terms of the current team, in terms of the current state of product, for instance, or the state of the technology, the maturation of the business, for instance, and how many other people are potentially going to be recruited, etc. All of those have potential. All of those bits of information are critical bits of information for the developer or the candidate, because it means that, you know, the role is going to be flexing and changing as those things go on. Okay, cool. We got to move on, folks. But before I let you two go, what I need from you is give me one great question each that you think a recruiter could and should ask a developer to get some useful information. Thoughts on this? Let's go to you first on this, Kritika.
I think a good question would basically be an amalgamation of talking about the technical abilities of the candidate and also what is the kind of work environment that the candidate is looking for, because eventually you're going to work with the team, right? So I think when you're having that initial conversation with the recruiter, it's very important that you kind of try to mirror as much as you can the actual environment that you're going to be working in. So it kind of includes everything, like the technical abilities, how's the culture, in the company, what is the sort of motivation they're expecting from the candidate. So I think it's an amalgamation of a total package, as I always say, that it's not just about going there and writing code. You actually have to work with the team, right? And in the team. So a good understanding of that on both the sides would be a good question for me.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's almost like you got to ask, you know, what is the optimal environment for you as a developer? Because that's not just a straightforward case of sitting down somewhere with a keyboard and typing away. There's lots of context there. Okay, great. How about you, Mingho?
I would say the context is the most important thing for me, and because beside the tech stacks, the context is something I would look at, and another thing I want to add on to the previous, like, we had talked about what is the back question to ask, but we haven't talked about a bad probably way to contact a developer or like to contact a someone, because I would say I have an example for that. I put like the best contact way to reach me is to reach me through probably LinkedIn or email first, but then I got a call immediately and with a private number, and normally I don't pick up the private numbers once, but at that time I was expecting something, so it didn't happen only once, and for me that's quite
you gotta throw your phone away, Mingho.
I think so.
You gotta throw it away. I remember a good friend of mine like ages ago, he said, yeah, Hung, I've just put my CV up on Monster, and I took a look at his CV, put his mobile in there. I said, listen, Gordy, that's it, man. You need a new phone, you need a new number. That's toast. That number's now scraped and it's in some place, and you're gonna get hit all the time with it, sad to say. So recruiters love the phone. I mean, I'm in various groups. Basically, recruiters think the phone is amazing. There's a reason for that as well, and mainly because it forces a synchronous conversation. Which means that I can influence you.
It turns out that it's a quite annoying stuff.
It's always annoying. I mean, I never pick up the phone, ever. That's true. There's only one person that can ever call my number and get through. That's my ma. Otherwise, no one ever, I just don't pick it up. But I can imagine other people having the same issue. I'm sure developers these days don't routinely pick up the phone, especially to an unknown number. But recruiters love it because they want to have the quick answer, the quick conversation. Yes, no, maybe, do it right there on the phone. And you know, recruiters are good on the phone. That's basically what is the kind of a wrestling over which medium to talk through. Anyway, listen, I've got to let you two go. We've got to bring on more guests. Thank you so much, Kritika Puri and Mingho Chang. We'll see you later.
Thank you. Bye.
See you all soon.
You know what? She's definitely in a restaurant. There's no way that's a co-working space. She's going to tuck into some noodles there or something. Anyway, super interesting.
Taiwan, they have
that looks like good food there as well. Anyway, that was really cool. But let's move swiftly on, because I want to bring on two fellows here that have got some really interesting experience being ex-developers that have become recruiters. How many of them are this? This is like a rare transition to make. But I think people like this have got a unique sort of experience to offer, because you know what? They have the technical skills. They encountered problems themselves when they were engineers, now thought, maybe I should pop over and do another thing. Mark Dubow, I think he's on the chat stream. He's also one of those. Oh my goodness, why was I sure that Florian would come in looking like that? That was so obvious.
Why?
Florian, great to see you, and even great to see you as well, man. Long time no see, both of you. Can you quickly just introduce yourselves to the audience? Florian, you first.
Cool. Yeah, let's start. I'm Flo, and in my previous life, obviously, I was a developer. In 2015, I was pretty tired of being a developer, took a sabbatical, and somehow ended up helping a founder building a team. And I really liked that. And I think always in hindsight, we realize that we have been doing that sort of thing before, just not giving it an official title. And from there on, I was just networking like a crazy, connecting founders, connecting engineers, helping engineers to find jobs or projects. And I was always trying to bring a new edge to recruitment, to put it more on eye level, do a lot of community work, and get developers the insights that they want and connect them right to the teams.
That's so great. Well, Flo, we'll talk about that with your experience a little bit more, because the interview side, I think, is super interesting given your kind of background that way. But let's also speak to Ivan. How are you doing, man? Who are you? What are you? What it is you do?
Yeah, all going well. We have a similar background. So I also worked as a developer. I actually moved to Zurich, Switzerland. Didn't know no one. So what I did besides going to the office and programming Python and JavaScript all day long was, well, going to meetups, to events, and then writing, blogging about Zurich. And that's like a great city for developers because we have actually a lot of startups, although it's a very small place, much smaller than Berlin, right? But still, like a big technology scene. Then via the blogging, I started actually to get CVs, yeah, that I forwarded. So I did the first placements for free because I didn't even know that headhunting is an industry and that, like, well, this is like a big, big industry, actually. Then companies started asking me, okay, how would you send us like profiles more often? And then I started doing that more on the side. So I still kept my like super good developer job. And then at some point in 2017, I was like, okay, I'm going to do this full time. And this is what I do since then.
Yeah, fantastic. And great to see that interplay. Very rare to see people move from an engineering focus to recruiting. And I think it's very good that that happens because that gives us different perspectives, different experiences that we can add into the mix. Okay, we're talking about interviewing. We're talking about bad interview questions, good structure interviews, et cetera, et cetera. Can you give me the most common mistake you think you see when tech recruiters speak to engineers? Let's go with you first, Flo. Classic error that tech recruiters make when they speak to software people?
I think it's not setting the context right and setting the right foundation for people to have a great conversation. So in the moment you feel interrogated or like spammed with questions, I think that's the wrong one. So I always try to make sure that I'm a person myself. I'm more acting like a buddy or like a partner. And I want to make sure that they understand what my role is and what their role is, so that I'm here to help them, that I'm here to get most of the insights that I can to prepare them well. So I'm really trying to make them understand what my motivation is and what theirs is, and yeah, really creating the grounds. And
let me stop you there, Flo. That's a really good point. You've really got to set the scene. As the person who's the recruiter, typically you're the person going out making first contact. Your job to make sure the other person is feeling comfortable to have the conversation. And the way to not make that person comfortable is to rattle off a list of questions with a checkbox type mentality. That's going to feel very much like an interrogation, as you say. That's not the way in which people communicate in a friendly manner. So you've got to kind of set the right tone. And I love the fact that maybe you kind of first thing you got to do is explain what you're doing and how you anticipate the relationship is going forward. Like, hey, I'm here to just find out a bit more about what it is that you're looking for, and then see how we can help. There's a couple of opportunities, but let's establish that fact. Okay, great. How about you, Ivan? What do you reckon classic mistakes tech recruiters typically do when they speak to engineers?
So actually, I was really thinking the whole time, okay, really bad interview questions. What is like a really bad one? There must be one. I'm doing this for 5+ years. There must be one where I can tell to hang, okay, this is really a shitty interview question. Please never, never ask this. It's horrible. But I couldn't find any. I think because actually like the real problem is when you don't do anything out of the answer. Let's say like any question actually you can ask. I think there's actually no forbidden questions, because if you feel comfortable with the candidate and if you feel that like asking something should be all right with this specific personality, because you can actually feel the personality of the person within a couple of minutes. And then the question is, do you make something out of it? It's the same with client briefings, right? So the client tells you what is the requirements and you write them, like the question is, do you write them down and forget about them, or do you actually like act on it? The same with the candidates. So they tell you like super important things, but you put it like in some notepad, but then like, can you communicate this to the client properly or to your hiring manager properly? I mean, I had it just today, like a candidate told me, hey, this hiring manager, he saw like that you wrote that like for this person, Java is okay. And the hiring manager was like, this sounds really like unmotivated. So I did like a bad thing in the candidate notes to not really make a good effort to have very good, clear written communication. So this was a mistake on my side, and I should have like thought more clearly, okay, how can I like say something like, I mean, realistic, because often recruiters are like, this is the greatest candidate, this person can do everything, and then it's not believable, right? So your notes has to be somehow like the reality, but also not too negative. And to me, funnily, this happens, like I'm quite like this, like I, like sometimes the formulation is a bit too direct, right? So from my personality to be too direct, it reflects on the written communication as well. So I should make an effort to make it like more positive. And maybe other people have the other thing. They should make, maybe they are too positive and they have to be like more realistic in how they communicate the notes that they wrote down after talking to the developer. And then this would be actually like very important, like a very like long-term effect on the result of the interview, such that the interview is not wasted. I see so many, like somebody talks to somebody for 40 minutes and it's like nothing happens, like everything is forgotten like 10 minutes later. That's a big problem, I think.
You know what, that's super super important, because the interview is actually there's so much information exchanged during an interview that's often never collected, particularly if a recruiter has of the mindset of the checkbox where they're just looking to tick off one or two things. They're ignoring everything else because they perceive all of that to be noise, and they're only looking for this one particular nugget. And in all of that, they're missing the nuance, the context, what the person is really saying to you. Like, you know, when you're recruiting, you know, when you're desperate to hire somebody, this person might be signaling to you without directly saying it that actually they don't want to work in that technology anymore. But you don't want to hear that because you're desperate to recruit and you're just hoping to find something to justify your preemptive decision, so to speak. So two things you mentioned there, Ivan, which I want to just explore a little bit. Firstly, you must do something with the information given to you by the developer. So in other words, follow-up questions would be a classic way to do this. And rather than just pick up the information and say, okay, moving on, this is how actually you become like an interrogator flow, you know, where you ignore the response and you keep asking the second another question. That's how, by the way, if you want to interrogate someone, that's how you do it.
There will be no flow in the conversation.
Yeah, there will be no flow in the flow. But the way to do it, the way to create a kind of a tense, attention-filled, unpleasant interrogation experience is to ask questions and not respond to the response. But anyway, let's not do that because we're not interrogators. What we want to do, though, is to create additional, increase the comfort level as we go, but also dive deeper into these questions. So ask for additional context when you get the response, ask what the person means, ask if the person can explain it in a different way, because that also is another way to dive deeper into the topic. And the second thing you mentioned, Ivan, which is really interesting, is actually the notes that a recruiter makes that they may later refer to or may submit to another person. You need to also very carefully consider the impact of those things. It's not just a case of reminders for yourself, but it's actually information that needs to impart accurate sentiment of the, what this developer wants to do and can do. And that's something that, you know, is maybe forgotten. Recruiters I know, for instance, often oversell. I used to do that. I'm one of these optimist people. I always back my candidates. But oftentimes you end up sort of doing them a disservice by putting them in a position where actually, you know, you've overemphasized their capability or interest in this thing. Okay, very good. Let's think about sort of some great questions to ask. There were no bad questions. Let's accept that as true, Ivan. I'm inclined to think that I've got sympathy with that view, but I think there might be some great questions to ask that can help you start, let's say, on your side flow, to start a good conversation in the right tone, or, you know, to get some true information about the person's capability. Any thoughts on that? Any great questions you want to share?
I think it's also a more generic answer I can give here is that, I mean, what makes a great conversation is that not that you are on the same level of knowledge. It's about a genuine interest in the person, something you want to learn from the person. So I always go into the CV and I really try to find something that really interests me. So it's more like, I think a good question is the opening question that starts the flow. So to really ask about something, it can also be a bit off context. It can even be a private question. But something that really gets the conversation going, and of course this is often in terms of motivation, or it can be anything. It can be an interesting project that they've been working on, or the company, but it has to be something that really interests you. So I think people can feel if you're just asking something to get the information, to the hiring manager, or if you're really asking something that you want to get out of this person. So it's
I tell you what I think you're saying here, Flo, correct me if I'm wrong, but it's almost like you've got to cultivate the mindset of caring about and taking an interest in this person. Because if you don't have the curiosity about what this person is all about, then that it doesn't matter if you have the perfectly structured question.
Yeah, why would you be on the call then?
If there Well, you have to have that, cultivate the interest, I guess. And I think part of the reason why maybe recruit developers or any candidates have bad experience is because the sort of you know, recruiting attracts a lot of people, but sometimes there isn't a native interest in the job or in the function. And oftentimes those are the people, you know, that are on the calls to candidates. I mean, we know there's no barrier to entry to be a recruiter, right? I mean, Ivan, you were saying you're doing this like accidentally. So there was like no barrier to entry, which is part of the issue. Okay. Same question to you, Ivan. Like, what is a good question that you think, you know what, if I'm listening to this and I'm watching this show and I really want to have this great conversation starter or really want to get better at hiring or having conversation with engineers, what is a good question that you can give us?
So I love the point you made before to actually use the weakness recruiters have that they don't understand technology as a strength. So when you ask the question, okay, tell me about what you did in your last project or the project you're most proud of, the problem is that some people, of course, will like be way too technical. Or people will think, okay, this person has no clue about what I'm talking, so I'm wasting my time, or other, let's say, bad things. So this question you can moderate in a way by adding something like, can you explain the project you're most proud of, or the project that you did in the last year that was exciting to you, to a non-technical person? So you make it actually explicit that you are not an expert in the field, and this like softens up the situation. And that, I think, is a great open-ended question that also can be like taken and really the notes that you then as a recruiter make out of that, I think, can be extremely valuable to a hiring manager. And to them also, you have to, of course, communicate, yeah, I'm not a technical person and so on. And then this would be, I believe, quite a valuable exchange.
Yeah. Absolutely right. And by the way, you know, I overemphasized it as a bit of a joke when I said embrace the ignorance. But in another way to reformulate that is to say you kind of don't be ashamed of being vulnerable of your knowledge, because, you know, you're not meant to have the same degree of knowledge as the person you're recruiting for. So ask to be educated. And everyone loves to coach, right? Everyone loves to be able to just teach someone just a little bit. And if you take it as, oh, this person is going to give me 5 minutes, 10 minutes worth of consultancy on this particular thing I didn't know about, treat it like that, then suddenly you'll get an activated candidate that's really interested and engaged in talking through this thing. Okay, cool. Listen, I've just noticed that time. Go ahead, Flo, go.
So I think as a recruiter, your goal is to understand the role the most you can, the whole aspect of it. I mean, it doesn't matter if you're recruiting for project managers or engineers or CRM people. I mean, you have to understand this world. Huh? And I had a funny case when I had to recruit for a CRM manager, never did it before. And I had a similar thing going on the side where I had needed this knowledge. So I told the person, look, I'm totally getting into this myself. It's a great opportunity for me to learn from you. And I think it's genuine interest. So if you, I mean, you should be interested in understanding the people that you recruit for more and more. So if you show that attitude, as you say, developers love it to share their knowledge. Everybody loves to share their knowledge and get people into their world. Huh? So you don't have to be an engineer to show interest in an engineer.
I think that point is really important to make. Like, firstly, people love to share their knowledge. I think that's generally almost a human thing that we love to do. And, you know, if you're a recruiter and you're not interested in some of the technology that these people are working on, it's crazy that you're not, because they're teaching you some stuff that is really hard to find elsewhere. This is not stuff that you'd be able to just Google, or if you want to sit on a Udemy course or get whatever. I mean, please do that, but of course, but you'll never get better education than the people who are practically doing the job. So I think when you're doing interviewing, always treat it as two-way process for yourself. It's not only assessing their capability and their interest in the job, but it's also an opportunity to be educated in the industry. Okay, cool. Listen, guys, I've just looked at the time. We're well over, so I'm going to have to move you two off. Thank you so much for joining us. You've been amazing. We'll definitely get you two back at a later stage. Thank you. So thank you, Flo. Thank you, Ivan. Wow.
So funny story, Ivan is really good to see you again. I don't know if you remember, we met at the St. Gallen, that tech conference there.
I just kicked Ivan off. I didn't realize it's a reunion. If it was, I would have kept him on for a little bit longer. But no, we'll bring Ivan back.
No worries.
Yeah, he's been a great he's been a great thinker. He's also a great tweeter, by the way. As Animal mentioned, he is definitely a person that people should pay attention to on that platform. Okay, we're going to move swiftly on. We're going to talk about seniority. We're also going to be talking from the hiring manager perspective as well, because we're going to bring on Diana Pavel, who's in the process of building a community, and also Joshua Hoffman, who is CTO of Blendl. There she is. Diana, how are you doing?
Hi. Good, thank you. I lost you there for a 20 seconds. I wasn't sure if my internet is really bad or something.
No, it would be a desperately sad thing if we were not able to get you on the show. So great to see you, Diana. And for the people who don't know you, can you quickly introduce yourself, who you are, what it is you do?
Sure. So my name is Diana. I worked as a tech recruiter for the last 7 years. And very recently, I also took a coding course. So I started working on a platform for junior developers to find mentors.
Amazing. And we're definitely going to explore both of those angles in a bit, Diana, because it's important, I think, to talk about seniority. Like, what is the right question to ask? Different seniority makes a difference. Anyway, also, Joshua Hoffman, great to see you, Joshua. For the people who don't know you, can you quickly introduce yourself, who you are and what it is you do, sir?
Cool. Thanks for having me here, Hung. I'm Joshua Hoffman, CTO at Blendl, and I have past lives at companies you may have heard of. Red Hat, Tumblr, and SoundCloud would be the big ones. I had a lot of fun there, and I started as an engineer, and now I have worked my way up and find myself a CTO.
Amazing. Well, it's a real honor to have both of you on the show. And we've already been talking to different types of people about this topic. What is a good question? What is a bad question? What is a good interview? What is a bad interview? Let's start off on some of those kind of classic errors, shall we say. So Diana, go to you first. What do you think is a classic mistake that tech recruiters make when they're interviewing software engineers?
So I think this is from my own experience. I know that before I acquired the tech skills that I have now, I felt very insecure about my level of knowledge. So I would try to mask that by doing some very sort of shallow research into a lot of technologies, a lot of potential processes. And I think because of that, many times I didn't come across as genuine or genuinely interested because I always try to get the next sort of thing in. So I would say that because of my experience, and I know that it's a shared experience for a lot of other tech recruiters, trying to, and I think this has been noticed, mentioned today as well, trying to basically mask your lack of knowledge by potentially, by basically asking irrelevant questions and wasting time.
You know what? That's a really important a point, particularly on a psychological dimension. Like the feeling of insecurity when you're speaking to someone who either may be more senior to you or may just simply have subject matter expertise that you don't. You don't want to look like the person that doesn't know what they're talking about. So you might just gather together a bunch of latest stuff and then feel the need to perform the knowledge in order to try and, be on an equal place. But you end up just either making a mistake or being inauthentic or not paying attention to the response. That's I think a very common thing. I felt the same when I was recruiting as well. I couldn't actually believe it, but the first time I was doing the job in recruiting, again, rewind back, you know, 20 years or so ago, I could not believe it that I was allowed to speak to candidates. Because it was like, what do you mean? Like, I do not know what this person does. And my boss at the time said, yeah, you don't, but the only way to figure it out is to speak to him. But I still couldn't believe it, because I had this crisis. So I totally get what you're saying. It's really important to understand that psychology. Before I go to you on this, Joshua, I just wondered one more thing with you, Diana. How do you, what is the better way to do it?
So I would say that, and I was basically going to mention this as well, I think as recruiters, we really owe it to our candidates to really find out what, you know, what we're looking for, to basically have better conversations with the people that we're recruiting for, with the hiring managers, with the teams. So I would say that because of that insecurity of, you know, basically the imposter syndrome of being found out that you don't know as much as, you know, you think that you should be knowing, you could potentially be quite shallow when it comes to, you know, talking to your hiring managers. So instead of saying, well, why do you need this technology? Why do you need 5 years, you know, with this tech? What is the minimum that you would take? And why is that? And basically asking a lot of questions to really understand the point of view of, you know, the hiring manager, who they tend to be very busy people, and they tend to think that they really know what they're looking for, but sometimes they don't. So a better way to do would be to basically get over it, to be the least knowledgeable person in the room for a while until you actually can acquire those skills. And I think we really owe that to the candidate, to basically be very, very prepared. It's potentially less, maybe not, you know, so prepared into getting a sense of their actual experience, but more about understanding what we're looking for as recruiters.
Yeah, that's perfect. And also you owe it to yourself as well, because it's very difficult to fake, you know, kick competence. At some point you get found out, and it's a crushing thing. The longer you leave that moment, the more crushing it is. Okay, let's move to you on this, Joshua. There's a lot of those points that Diana mentioned, I'm sure we'll revisit. But let's go back firstly to the question, obvious and bad mistake you see tech recruiters make, like the thing that you see is persistent issue that, you know, maybe an inexperienced recruiter does. What are those things?
Yeah, I think the biggest challenge I run into is, you know, if you talk about questions, a question like, are you senior? And this is one of those things that I don't think the term is well defined. So it's first of all really important to understand what that means to the hiring manager. And then also years of experience, it's not always relevant or so important. And this kind of thing of you have 5 years of experience with this. I need someone who has 5 years of experience with that. I bring them in, and the first thing they tell me is, man, I'm tired of working on that. You know, that's not the candidate I was looking for, right? So the candidate I was looking for is 5 years of experience or whatever, lots of expertise, and really wants to keep going and you know, hit the ground running, just deliver for us. But instead we found someone who's kind of burned out on this topic and they're really looking to make a change, and somehow there's a communication breakdown there. But I think my biggest struggle is really when I have a need for a senior person in a role. That is where I find the biggest maybe disconnect or just difficulty in getting those candidates in from a recruiter, because it is so hard to pin down what exactly that means. So I think you really have to have an in-depth conversation about what you're looking for. What does it mean? You know, at a minimum, if you're going to ask a candidate, are you a senior or whatever, the next question should be, what does that mean to you? How do you define senior? How are you defining it? So we can make sure we're actually not talking past each other, because it's just a big one.
You know what? Really, really interesting direction. Let's sit on this area a little bit more. So I think it is fascinating. I mean, typically it goes like junior, mid, senior, team lead, and then you're some sort of departmental head, doesn't it? That's what we have in our minds, and we want to slot people into it. But as you mentioned, Joshua, it is like a nebulous term. And you know, all of us as recruiters, I'm sure, by the way, you've had that experience where you've like got a candidate who calls himself senior, you get him in the process, and then by the time he's finished the process, your engineers are telling him that's a junior candidate. And then you think, how do I have that conversation with the candidate? How have I got this so wrong? And the truth of the matter is, there isn't like a universal industry-wide standard as to what senior is. And it's really hard for us to define. And of course, we're not going to be able to do it in the course of this call, but I want us to maybe give us a little bit of a go at it. I mean, how would you define senior in your team, for instance, Joshua? How is that person different from someone who's just an operational member of the engineering team?
It's a great question. And I actually think this is the first question, or at least an important question, a recruiter should ask any hiring manager. Because when I got into leadership and discovered that not only do recruiters, candidates, and companies define seniority in different ways, I realized that most companies don't define it at all. They just kind of, Hung seems pretty senior. So what am I looking for? Well, first, within my team, we define it as a group. What do we see as senior? What do we expect? And a lot of times, it's not so much about, I have 10 years experience with functional coding or something like that, but it's really more about, I would say, operational maturity, right? So in other words, do you actually think about the organizational needs or your personal growth needs, and how do you balance those? And in any given assignment, which way are you going to lean into? A lot of times, the person I see as most senior is the one who is willing to do the boring, ugly cleanup work that must be done, that is critical for stability of the platform, and then it isn't interesting to most people who are new and learning and want to do exciting things. I think there's also a certain amount of comfort in achievement. In other words, you've gotten to the point where you don't feel you need to prove yourself, right? That's part of being a senior, because you're confident in who you are, and you're happy to do that unglamorous work because you don't have anything to prove. But a big part of it is also soft skills and communication. You know, can you mentor and bring up the people around you? Will you take initiative on your own to talk to another team about a problem you see there and how you think it could be solved that they're stuck on? You know, for me, these are aspects of seniors that I think are often missed in technical discussions.
You know what? Some really interesting insight there. I want to go sort of, by the way, Ilya and Diana, please help me out if I forget stuff, because my brain doesn't work, as everyone knows. First things first, to define senior might actually be a good exercise for a recruiter to do with the hiring manager to say, okay, you've told me I'm looking for a senior engineer. Has the team agreed what that is? And maybe this should be an open conversation within the hiring context, the group of people that make up the team. How do we define senior? Get everyone on board and contributing and inputting as to what that means. That way, you jointly own the decision of the candidates coming through, and you avoid the situation where the recruiter presents candidates that are dismissed for not being senior enough. First, so I think that's a good technique. The second thing you mentioned, which I thought was super interesting, was this attitude. The attitude of seniority is a good signal. It's a decent signal if they're prepared to do the grunt work in a strange way. So they're not, if you like, neophiles. They're not people that are just obsessed with the latest technology because they want to have a play. But they're able to calculate, actually, this is untested technology. If we bring it into the system right now, we don't know whether this is going to be continued to be supported next year, 2-3 years or whatnot. We can't take that risk with this critical piece of kit. We have to go to the version before or to some more mature tech, and they have to be able to endorse that position. How many of us have been in situations where the engineers just go charging off and just adopt the latest tech without anybody stopping them? Because actually, there may not be a senior enough person in that group of engineers to say, yo, we have to stop because that's immature right now, even though it may be better performing at this point, but it's unstable because it's so new. Really good thing to think about. And a final point I think you mentioned that was super interesting, Joshua, was this idea of the ability to spot opportunities where they can support. So this may be within team, but it may also be outside of team. In which case, is this person able to see just over the horizon of their current sort of work pattern and be able to say, oh, this could help these guys here. Let's go and see whether there's some support I can provide. So lots of things in there. Quick one for both of you. How do we find that out? Because a lot of people are going to say, I'm senior developer. And in fact, I think engineers are incentivized and motivated to do so. And you know, obviously increased market value. There's also ego in there as well. You know, they want to move on and so on. That's normal stuff. But how do we make, how do recruiters sort of try and pass that out? Or is it impossible for us to do? Go to you first with that, Diana.
How do we find out at screen stage if a candidate is senior enough?
Correct.
I think it's quite a difficult thing for us to be able to assess on the very first call. It's I think, you know, recruitment as an industry, we're relying quite a lot on someone's portfolio or someone's CV, someone's, you know, GitHub account. We look at all these things as the best way of assessing someone's skills. And as we all know, that actually isn't, because not everyone has time to contribute to open source projects. Not everyone has time to write posts on Medium. It doesn't mean that just because someone does all that work, they will be amazing in an organization. I think this comes from, first of all, really understanding what the organization needs are, because senior can mean very different things for very different people. A really early stage company that needs an MVP built will be completely different from, and they might actually be okay with a junior, someone like me, you know, who has a year's experience coding to build that, or they might be slightly bigger and having bigger ambitions and they will need a bit more experience. But I think, you know, from our side as recruiters, I think we need to allow ourselves to be right or wrong and to ask questions, further questions. I think our main goal should be to give our candidates a really good experience when it comes to the first conversation, and to basically admit, hey, you know, I'm not entirely sure if you are at the right level, but I can go back and check with the team and I will take notes and I'll be very thorough and I will go and, you know, discuss this with everyone else. Because I think on a one-to-one level, it's a difficult thing to get right. And I don't know if other people have had other experiences where, you know, you get it right every single time.
Well, I think that's a legitimate position to take. Sometimes you've got to recognize, hey, this cannot be done in any systematic way with a single recruiter at this point in the process. Maybe that's not part of the job then. We need to shift that sort of portion out of what the recruiter does. Let's double down on what the recruiter can do, which is the employer branding side, the onboarding side, the candidate experience side, some degree of assessment, probably on things like motivation and stuff like this. Yes, yeah, you can do that. But then, you know, other people need to be clear in their responsibility. So this is where the maturity and seniority of the recruiter is important, because you might then need to go back to your team and say, hey, listen, it's not my job to establish level of seniority. You've got to go and do that, because this is how we're going to parcel out the assessment side. Okay, cool. Let's go to you, Joshua. Let's tease on the seniority side again a little bit more. I think this is worth, again, spending a little bit more time on, even maybe focusing for the rest of the show. How do you establish via interviewing, if it's possible to do via interviewing, whether someone is senior enough? Like on the seniority kind of table we might have imagined, how do you position the person? Is it possible to do via interview?
Yeah, so I think it's a couple of things. You can definitely get a good sense via interview. One of the questions I use, also someone in chat put in there, which is, you know, how did your role change when you progressed into a senior title? That is exactly one of the questions I would ask, because now you're not really saying, are you senior, but you're asking the person to explain, you know, what it is that they consider that they've become senior. And I would be looking for answers like, you know, I have responsibility over the architecture of this project, or I've been asked to focus more on unblocking others than writing my code. A simple question would be, you know, I see you're employed as a full-time senior developer. Can you tell me how your time is spent? In other words, do you spend 75% of your time coding and 25% doing architecture, or, you know, how does it break down? Typically, I find that the further along someone is in their journey, you know, senior staff, principal, distinguished engineer, oddly enough, the less amount of time they're actually spending coding, and the more amount of time they're spending communicating and getting the right people in a room and understanding the, you know, systemic issues that are going to come up when they're working on a project that crosses multiple teams in an organization, stuff like that. You know, I often ask a question that's sort of related, but if somebody, you know, hasn't had a senior in their title now, and they're applying for a senior role, and I asked them, you know, okay, what is it about this senior role that you're attracted to? And that answer as well, I think, really helps. Something like if the person says, you know, well, I want to be in charge of something, you know, that would slow me down. Say, okay, well, that's maybe not the best thing to say. But, you know, if they say, look, you know, I'm really into coaching my colleagues and bringing everyone up to the next level and helping everyone and also, you know, being responsible for important technical choices, you know, these kind of things. That's kind of more the attitude I want to hear. I think there needs to be a little bit of humbleness to it. Again, the senior person, as I said before, they don't feel like they have anything to prove. But can you do it in an interview process? You know, again, I look at my definition of senior I've built with my team, and then we craft questions that we actually bring every time to see, do we get an answer that puts us on this scale? What I've also done in organizations like my current one, where we have a career framework, which defines levels of seniority, is we actually wait 2 months before we place someone there after they've started, right? So we hire them where we think they are, but we actually want to see the behaviors they demonstrate, because for me, seniority is not an award. Like I say, here, you now have been challenged to rise up and be senior. But instead, for me, senior is a recognition of the behaviors you're already having. So when I say, yeah, you clearly demonstrate all of these competencies that we consider senior and all of these behaviors that track across, you know, what we've made important, you clearly are at the senior level. And that's what we're looking for.
That's really, you know, fascinating. Go ahead, Joshua, sorry.
Oh, yeah, just to say, you know, the more specific you can make your criterion, the better. So we have things like, can solve a medium-sized problem rather than something like is expertise in this technology, right? So then I could ask them, you know, at your previous job, what would you consider small, medium, and large problems? And can you tell me the one you're most proud of and how you solved it? You know, and this way, if they can define them, but they really only have experience with how they define small, or they define large the way I define small, that's getting us more to the same understanding.
Yeah, that's great. I mean, I love so much about this. You know, I love the fact that there's an internal conversation in the engineering team to establish the framework, right? So it's not just the CTO in his, you know, chucking out the labels. You've got to get the group to define it properly and say, okay, this is how it looks. Then formulation of the questions after the framework has been built. So in other words, okay, we're saying we need a senior developer. Great. How do we find that out on interview? Well, we need to construct the questions in order to try and get some answers that would reflect that. So I think they're really great examples. This is stuff that people should definitely be paying more attention to. I think someone's actually shared your public Notion on that. Blendl's got a lot of information out there. So I would totally recommend people check that out. I will include that in the email I'm going to send as a follow-up, because I think that's a really good example. It's an immediate resource, number one, but also a really good example of the things that you could do when you're trying to build sort of a framework of this type. And finally, I love the consistency of question, by the way, Joshua. Like, if you're going to hire over a repeat state, sort of a certain level, there's certain questions that should be consistently asked, in order for you to get some sort of benchmarking going on, rather than sort of randomizing it overly much. Okay, quick question for both of you. In terms of how do you deal with it of developer egotism? So you're hiring for a senior developer, or you're hiring for a developer, but he happens to be senior, and you've got like interviewers that, you know, you've sent them off to do the interview because you were the CTO. You can't be interviewing every single person in the business. But they're coming back to you saying, yeah, Joshua, not senior enough. It's like, how do you kind of ameliorate that issue? Because I think all of us developers, any human being is going to have that jealousy issue. They're going to have territoriality. They're going to have this sense of, oh, is this person going to show me up? You know, all these types of things. How do we solve that issue, or is it solvable at the interview stage? Either of you give this a shot.
Sure, I'm happy to jump in. I think for me, this actually goes to a bigger point. In that tech interviews in most companies suck. I'll just be happy to say it. And the reason I think that is because in many organizations I've worked at and even interviewed with, there's no consistency at all. Like, how you're going to be interviewed might be up to who randomly got assigned to interview you that day. And I don't think that's fair or right. So for me, part of that is that ego question, right? If you got picked by the person with the big ego who feels threatened and they don't want to hire you, you miss out. And if you got picked by the, you know, very humble person who is impressed with you and wants to learn from you, you're going to get a thumbs up. And that's not how it should work. So for me, it's really about formalizing and making consistent the interview process. And the way that I approach that with my team is I don't just, you know, pick some random people to have them do the interviews. As a group, as well as doing the exercise of constructing those questions around our framework, we actually go a step further and assign questions to the interviewers, right? So I want the same set of questions consistently asked to every candidate. And I want the interviewers to be a little bit trained in how to identify a quality answer versus an evasive answer. And I want them to write the answer down, so that when I get feedback from the interview, we have a consistent set of information to look at. Because if somebody says, well, this person's not senior, I say, yeah, but you wrote down here, they accomplished this, 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 and this, and they did that. So what is it about, you know, them not being senior that you feel? And then they can kind of explain it, or, you know, maybe you can then detect that the ego is getting in the way. But it should be that any applicant who comes to the company, no matter who is assigned to the interview, it's going to be substantially similar. And if they were to apply multiple times for some reason, that they would have the same result, that it would again be consistent. So, you know, it's funny, I sat through some interviews today and some feedback I gave to colleagues, well, you're just having a conversation, which is nice, but I have no way to take what you brought back from this interview and compare it to these others who were much more formal and followed the assigned questions and got the right answers. And, you know, a little bit of training, like, I don't like we answers. I like I answers. You know, if I say to someone, tell me about a project you're really proud of, and they say, well, you know, we put a rocket up in space and then we landed it perfectly on the platform somewhere. I said, that's amazing. What was your part of it? Oh, yeah, I brought the food cart. You know, okay, well... You know,
that's the most important fine, job. But... That's the most important yeah. job, Joshua. No, listen, I wonder whether anybody here has actually heard of a product called MetaView. Because if you haven't, you really need to check it out. Joshua, I think you should as well, because given what you've just said over the last 2 minutes or so, I think you'd love this product. It is doing things like recruiting metadata. So in other words, it is trying to track exactly how many questions are asked, who is asking the questions, what type of questions, how long are the answers, all those types of things. It is absolutely superb for interview consistency, but also interview analytics. So in other words, being able to bring it back to the hiring manager, to the CEO, whoever it is, and say, yo, you've got a problem with your interview because they're all over the place. People are asking different questions. You can't measure the quality of the candidate experience, number one. You can't measure the quality of the candidate, number two. So I think these guys are setting up kind of a new category. They're going to be a super interesting business. I'd recommend people check them out. Okay. We are like running well out of time, folks. So before I leave, I'm going to keep both of you on screen if you're still okay with it. We've got 13 questions asked by the crowd that we need to just pound through, okay? So we're going to just like, I'm going to shout them out, and then we're going to try and answer them, and then hopefully we're going to be done in 10 minutes. Let's do the first one. This is from Dean Fletcher. What is the best way to secure developer attention? I'm sure the developer community, actually, Dean, we dealt with that on how do you do the first message. So go and check out the first show, which I'll share in the link. We dealt with that one. Okay. Second question from Kyle. I would be interested to hear how the initial screening questions from a recruiter should differ between contract and permanent roles. That's an interesting one. So the employment contract is different. Is there a material difference to the questions that a recruiter should be asking?
I think yes, because if it's a short-term gig, I'm really looking for a mercenary, right? Somebody who's well-experienced, come in, get the job done, and you know, they're not looking to make a long-term relationship. Yeah. And I'm going to be much more tolerant of rough edges on a person like that, to be frank, because it's just achieving a business outcome. You know, when I'm looking for someone to add to my team that I want to have long-term, then yeah, there's going to be different questions about, you know, what are your goals? What's important to you? What keeps you at a company a long time? You know, these kind of things. I think it's a totally different conversation.
Yep. Totally different role, totally different conversation. I totally agree. Okay. Let's move on. How long should a hiring process be from a developer's point of view? I work as an agency tech recruiter, and personally, I often advise against a short process. So, can an interview process be too short from a candidate point of view? Thoughts on this, anybody?
Yes, I think so. I mean, I've met quite a few people who were, I guess, impressed, but in a negative way, that the interview process was so short, because they felt that they haven't had to put enough effort in it, which meant that maybe the role wasn't so serious for the business. Yeah. And it's actually one of those questions that I always ask, you know, what are your thoughts on the interview process, even if the person doesn't get the role? Because I think it's important to make sure that you're not, first of all, you're not being, you know, maybe shallow in your questions or in the process. And as well as that, you give the candidate an opportunity as well to understand the business better, to meet in all the right people, or at least, you know, part of the team, and really get a good sense of what they'll be doing.
You know what? That's a really good sort of thing to think about, because interview processes have truncated with this shift to remote, right? I mean, you hear people like VMware saying, hey, we're doing like offer, sort of contact to offer in like 30 days or something for a technical person. And you think, yeah, that's usually a 90-day process. So they've been able to chop it right the way down because everything's shifted to remote. But are we sometimes accelerating too quickly? Because sometimes this is a big decision. You need to take a little bit more time. So possibly is the answer to that question. Okay, moving on. This is from Jamie Dillon. What does the ideal hiring process like look like from a developer point of view, while at the same time balancing the needs of the employer through the interview process? I think we've kind of answered that through the course of this this conversation. I've got to say, Jamie, so we're going to move on. Let's move on to this one from Joanna. From a developer's point of view, what's the best way to receive negative feedback? Great question. I'm going to go, in fact, both of you are now kind of developers, but how, if you've been rejected from a job, how best to receive that kind of negative feedback?
You know, that's a really interesting question. I think you could spend a whole episode on this, because yeah, I think the first issue is whether or not, as a company that's hiring, if we should provide negative feedback other than, you know, we went with someone else who was, we felt was more better fit. I have been in both camps and tried both ways and had sometimes very positive and sometimes very negative experiences. But I think as a developer, if you're asking for that feedback, it shouldn't be because you want to put on your hat as a lawyer and start litigating your response, because that's just a mistake and it's not going to impress anyone. But for some reason, you know, if I say to you, look, the sample code you turned in, I think you used very difficult to understand options for your syntax, and you know, the readability was not at the level that we'd like to see. And then the person, you know, on an ideal day would say, you know, thank you very much. I really appreciate the feedback. I'll work on that. Versus somebody who says, no, I don't agree, you're wrong, you can see here I did this, and that's never a productive conversation, right? So I think this is why a lot of organizations just choose not to give any detailed feedback. I don't know a great answer for this, but I think if you're the developer asking for it, and you know, I myself have been there as well, you want to really be open-minded about it and not respond at all, just other than thank you for the feedback, and then pore over it, look into it, you know, maybe ask your peers that, you know, do you see this in me as well? Like, and then see if it's an area to improve, then you've just gotten something valuable and you can improve. But it shouldn't be an invitation to argue.
Go ahead, Deanna.
So I think also, obviously I've noticed quite a few different things in my career as a recruiter. So there are a lot of companies that insist on hiring managers and interviewers to write down their feedback right after the interview. And I think it's very important from a recruiter's perspective to have things written down, because then you can read it, you can go back to it, you can, you know, when people change their mind during the interview process, which happens a lot more than it should, you can go back on those points. So if someone a candidate invests a good amount of time in the interview process, they go through a technical task, and then eventually they get rejected, and they ask for feedback, I think it's important, even if the feedback is negative, I think it's important to find a positive spin and to actually give them that feedback, because there could be quite a lot of improvement points. And I've heard, I don't like Facebook as a company, I hope I don't offend anyone here, but I haven't worked there, but I heard that actually their feedback process is amazing, and they really focus on the positives and the negatives during the interview process, and they give everyone like consistent feedback on the interview, you know, once they interview with them. And for that reason, people keep applying and reapplying for jobs. Well, I'm sure it's not the only reason, but people don't mind going through the same interview process again if it means that they know what they should improve on. And from my own personal experience, I've turned a no into a yes by putting 6 more months of work into what I needed to improve. And that was based on feedback that I've had that was genuine.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And you know what? This is one of the difficult things. I mean, no one likes to, you know, no one likes the bad news. People assume that they can take it, so to speak. But oftentimes your ego is in the way and it gets injured. You take it personally and you kind of end up in a cantankerous situation, which is super unpleasant. And there's certain jurisdictions actually where people are informed not to give feedback entirely to avoid these types of scenarios, because you put yourself and the business at risk by making these assessments. And let's face it, as a recruitment business or when you're recruiting, it is a judgment call at the end of the day on whether this human being is going to be a great worker for your company. There's going to be elements of subjectivity to that, no matter how objective the process might be. So really difficult to handle. Folks, we're running out of time. We can't get to all the questions. I'm really sorry, but I'm also conscious of the time that Deanna, Ilya, and Joshua have already donated to us. I can't bleed any more out of you guys. So I want to say that's it for the end of the show. So Deanna, thank you so much for your time. We have to catch up, by the way. It's been an age since we've had the chance to chat. So good to see you. And I'll be in touch with you shortly, okay? You have a good weekend. Joshua, really good to see you, sir. Thank you so much for your input. I think there's a lot more we could explore in this with you. And I'd love to get you back at some other point if you're still tolerant to the idea of turning up to Brain Food Live. Because I think we should talk about how to do leveling and how to do like seniority and stuff. That's amazing things to dive into. But Joshua, you have a very good day and a great weekend as well, sir.
Thanks a lot. Have a good one and be happy to do it again anytime.
Great. Wow, Ilya, my apologies. Wow, yeah. To you. What a great show. It's like 90 minutes. I thought, holy crap. Yeah, I mean, I wish we... Yeah, you know what? Sometimes I think that this should be like an unlimited show. Just keep going, you know? But I know that everyone's got stuff to do and like inevitably the diaries are kind of stuffed in there and it's difficult. But sometimes the conversations are so good, they really shouldn't be terminated. But anyway, folks, if you are interested in this type of dialogue, we actually have one more from a developer's point of view to go. And I fully recommend you check this out. So I'll send it in an email to everyone who's registered. But if you haven't followed the channel, by the way, please do so now. And you'll be updated anyway on when this show is live. We're going to be talking about the next stage, which is onboarding. I believe Joshua is back for us for that. How do you handle onboarding? What is the best way to do it? What is the worst experience you can get an engineer, give an engineer, should I say? Yeah, it's going to be super important because we know if you get the onboarding aspect wrong, that's one of the biggest determinants for job retention and actually job performance because the person is like, you know, trying to figure out as they go. And if you start on the wrong foot, it can go badly wrong. Okay, Ilya, let me let you go. Thank you so much for your time.
Go ahead. I'll see you February 5th again, right? That's the next one. So
it is February 5th. I'm going to share the link to it right now. In fact, I wonder whether someone can do that because I don't want to kill this show accidentally, which I might do. I'll tell you what's going to happen.
I might have it here.
Okay. Let me just boom it there.
I don't know if it's there. No.
I got it. Okay. I'm going to share it via email to everyone anyway. But if you want to log into this, please do so. You can register for it now. It is going to be a great show and it will finish off this mini series, which I think has been just an amazing sets of episodes. Really fantastic. Indeed. Okay, Ilya, listen, let me let you go. Thank you so much for getting up early. Go and have your breakfast and your coffee and stuff like that. You have a good day, sir.
You too. Have a great weekend, Hung. And thanks, everyone. Take care.
What a great show. So many great people. Did I fail to invite someone on? I probably did. If I did do that, I'm really sorry. And I'm also sorry I didn't get to everyone's questions, by the way. I know I asked you all to do it, but there was a ton of questions in there. We ended up having 13, 14 questions. I couldn't deal with it all. Anyway, that's it. End of the week for me. So go and have a very good weekend, everybody. We'll see you next week.